You're listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amswell.
Hello and welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil. I'm your host, Shane Stetsny, and this is our final show before we head to the big house, Crandon International Raceway, for the 52nd Polaris Crandon World Championships. Pro and Sportsman Points Championships are going to be crowned on Saturday. That's just a couple days away now. It's the biggest crowd, the biggest party, a carnival atmosphere. It's the highest stakes, and it's off-road's biggest stage. I can't wait. It promises to be yet another fantastic weekend of racing here at Amsoil Championship Off-Road. But before we get to our first guest, let's take a look at a couple of our pro points chases, because there are a couple very good points chases. First, looking at Pro Mod side-by-side. Andrew Carlson looked like he had this thing just about locked up entering Bark River, and then back in round nine, disaster struck. He was scored with a 19th place finish after some mechanical issues. That moved him all the way from first down to third in points, exiting Bark River. Rod Van Epperen has that points lead right now. Remember, pros only have one round of points racing left, so Van Epperen, Rodney Van Epperen, that is, he just needs to finish eighth or better on Saturday, and he'll lock up this points chase. But Owen Van Epperen, his son, is in second, only 17 points down. If he can finish nine spots ahead of Rodney, and no worse than a couple spots behind Carlson, or if Andrew Carlson can finish 12 spots ahead of Rodney and a couple spots ahead of Owen Van Epperen, either of those guys could take the championship too. It's going to come down to the wire, and at Crandon, wacky things happen. There's extra competitors coming from all over the country just to get in on the action for this one weekend. Those are guys that can throw a wrench into other drivers' plans. Plus, you have the land rush start that you have to think about. You can make a mistake, or someone else can make a mistake that can cost you that race in turn one. So that one, certain to be an entertaining race on Saturday afternoon. Another one I'm looking forward to, of course, Pro 2. On our last episode, we talked to Keegan Kincaid, who comes into the weekend, into this final points race, third in points. He's 25 points behind Jarrett Brooks, who's put together a really strong season so far. And Corey Winner is sandwiched in the middle, too. Brooks has 432 points. Winner has 415. Kincaid, 407. Brooks could lock that up in round 11 with an eighth place finish or better. Winner is going to have to finish nine spots better than Brooks and stay within vision of Keegan Kincaid. Just a couple spots he can give up to Kincaid. Kincaid would have to finish 13 spots better than Brooks, four spots better than Winner. And then you've got Ryan Beat kind of hoping for a series of miracles on the outside looking into that points chase. Interestingly, Corey Winner sitting second in points. Like I said, if he finishes nine spots better than Jarrett Brooks, and that's absolutely possible with the way things go at Crandon, especially at World Championship weekend, could steal this title. But he would do it in remarkable fashion because he has not won a race yet. So if he can win this title without winning a race, it's been a long time since we've seen a pro-class driver do that here in the Midwest in off-road racing. One class that is not so hotly contested is Pro Light. Of course, Brock Hager locked up that points championship after round 10. He won seven of the first 10 races in Pro Light. But that battle for second in that class, Kyle Greaves and Dylan Poynton separated by 16 points, and Maddox Bailey, Carson Parrish right in the mix as well. So that will promise to also be an entertaining race, as those guys are just trying to pick up another win at this point, or maybe move up a couple spots in the point standings. Which brings us to our first guest. He is from Pro Light. Let's talk now to Dylan Poynton. Dylan, thanks for taking some time out on the busiest week of the year for you.
Yeah, hey Shane, thanks for having me, man. Yeah, it's definitely going to be an exciting week. So
for you, for the pro drivers, one more points race, and then you get that ring race, the World Cup race on Sunday. As far as Pro Light points, that race was over after round 10. Brock Hager has that championship, but you could still move up from third to second in points with a good race in round 11. Would a second place in points be meaningful to you, or are you just focused on trying to pick up that first Pro Light win?
Well, yeah, you know, they say second place is first loser, right? So Brock ran away with it this year. He's flawless. He's going to be, you know, congrats to him. But yeah, we're really just focusing forward. Really want that first win, man. We've been chasing it. We're finally starting to see some success in Pro Light, which is, you know, an unbelievable feeling. Never thought we'd end up here. Really good season so far for us. But yeah, this last weekend is going to be a hard one. Lots of new drivers coming in, guys that haven't raced with us yet this year. I know a lot of them are fast. competition is definitely stepping up. So, so yeah, but we're just going to push hard for the win, man. That's what we're here for. You know, top three in points is definitely meaningful to us for what we feel like is our first successful pro light season. But yeah, a win would just make it that much better this year.
So you mentioned that you're having a pretty successful year, and obviously being top three in points in such a competitive class is a great season for you. But you're coming off the best weekend that you've ever had in pro light with a third and a second. So what's your confidence level like entering this final round?
It's a huge confidence booster, man. You know, it definitely is eye opening, you know, when you're struggling and fighting to get up front and trying to figure out, you know, making changes, lots of adjustments, learning how to drive the truck better, getting more comfortable with equipment, was a big part of it. And then as you start, you know, progressing and moving forward, and then we finally found ourselves on the box the first time at Lena at Dirt City. And then from there, the confidence has just been boosted. We know that we could run up front, you know, but it takes a perfect run to win it. And that's just what we're working towards. You know, I've been putting in a lot of work this off or in the previous off seasons, and this year definitely showed. So it's been great to get to come out and just kind of show and see our efforts, you know, finally start to pay off.
So going back to the first time we went to Crandon back in June, you led both races. Round four, you actually led at halfway, and it looked like the race was yours until you lost your right rear wheel. You've obviously got some speed at Crandon. So what's the secret? What do you have cooking there?
You know, man, there it was just a matter of great setup. We've been working with Mike VanHeuvel this year, well known in this industry, and he's got some great secrets and some go fast tips, definitely. And yeah, it was just a matter of getting out front both rounds in the spring run, pulled the whole shot and kind of didn't expect it, really, which is funny because everyone's going for the whole shot, right? You're never not going to go for it. And we found ourselves up front and just had to stay calm and keep pushing for it. So I'm hoping we can do it again this weekend.
So how many years is this that you've raced at World Championship Weekend? I know you had a handful of years racing here in the Midwest and side-by-sides too. So how many years is this for you?
Yeah. So I think we're coming up on our fourth year of a World Championship Weekend. So in 2020, unfortunately, we missed it. We started racing UTV side-by-sides in 2017, and we had a good run there. We got second place actually at our first World Cup, so runner-up. We're definitely hungry for the top spot. And then we raced 19 in pro light, getting our feet wet, and yeah, now this will make our fourth year.
So a lot of drivers that I talk to and have gotten to know over the years, especially those who stick around for a while, they seem to build this special relationship with Crandon, not just the track and the World Championship event, but kind of the whole community. Do you feel like you're starting to maybe see that in your own personal experience?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Anyone that's been here will tell you, man, it's a true special experience. Crandon means a lot to a lot of the drivers here for more than just the racing. The community is the best motorsports community in the world, in my opinion. The fans are great. You know, you have the Friday parade. You can't beat that, man. And this year we're adding, you know, class 11 Bugs. That's going to be amazing to be able to watch them. We got the Ultra 4 guys out here. Crandon has just brought together a community unlike anything else I've ever seen in any other motorsport. We've done a lot of things over the years. I've been very, very lucky to be able to compete in multiple different kinds of motorsports growing up, and I've never seen anything quite like Crandon. So it's definitely a bucket list item if you haven't made it out here.
So you mentioned your history a little bit. I know that you raced some karts, you did some asphalt stuff. How did you find out about off-road racing, or what opened your eyes that, we had this great off-road scene here in the Midwest?
Honestly, the side-by-side is what brought us into off-road. I've always loved just, you know, playing around. My parents owned some property. We were out of Denver, Colorado, just south of it. And we got a little track that we play around on. And my dad's always owned, you know, razors and stuff growing up. So when the Yamaha YXZ came out, we saw a sequential gearbox and a car that just looked like a race car right out of the box. So, bought one of those and found a race series local in Colorado called RMURA. And from there, we went out, competed, had a ton of fun. I mean, it was the off-road community that made it so fun for us. You know, everyone was willing to help, and just like out here in the Midwest, man, just ton of fun. So we're talking with some guys in Colorado at the RMUA series, and they're saying, hey, man, we're going out to Crandon, Wisconsin this year. You guys should come out with us and just check it out. So 2016, Crandon World Cup, we fly, me and my dad, just us two, fly out, show up out here, and in the same field I'm sitting in right now, actually, we were just blown away that this is out here in northern, in, you know, in the northern woods. So we're watching the we're watching the race. It's just like, man, we got to do this next year. This is way too cool.
You were actually kind of one of the first side-by-side guys that made the jump into pro trucks. There's been a handful that did it, especially over the last couple of years, guys like Zykowski and a few others. Was a move into the trucks something that you wanted to do from the first time that you were exposed to it?
When I was sitting at a staging in 2017, I believe Chicago was our first race, Chicagoland. I was sitting behind, I think, some trucks I vividly remember, and just going, man, those things are crazy. I would have never thought that we'd be here right now. you know, we're just a couple guys out of Colorado. I don't even know if there's ever been a short course race in Colorado, you know, at this level. And I was hooked instantly. I, back then, never would have thought that we'd be where we're at now. But 2018, we were racing UTVs again, pretty strong, and was seeing a couple trucks, you know, pro lights for sale and getting to know some drivers and kind of talking about it. And we went, me and my dad went, man, we could do this, you know? So we bought a pro light, and next thing we know, we're going into 2019. I think Crandon was the first round that year, and we just haven't looked back since, you know? It was a huge learning curve, though. We definitely had our growing pains. But yeah, man, I mean, I would have never thought, if you would have asked me if I was going to be racing pro light, you know, 4 years ago, I would have never thought that that was going to be a possibility. Pretty crazy. Pretty surreal moment to be out here at the, you know, one of the biggest World Cups Crandon's ever seen, I think, this year. We have record entries. Mm-hmm. And just to think that we're a part of that is pretty surreal to me.
Like you said, you live in, you know, the Denver, Colorado area. So what does your actual schedule look like? You know, how do you balance all the travel back and forth racing here in the Midwest? And I mean, does the truck travel with you, or how do you coordinate all that?
Yeah. So, at the end of the day, you know, it's me and my dad putting in a bunch of hours. I'm super grateful to have him help me. I definitely wouldn't be doing it without him. But we take the truck back to our shop located south of Denver, after each round. So it's definitely been a bit of a struggle. We're always about 2 days behind other teams because of travel time. You know, I know a lot of the West Coast guys ended up staying out here for the summer out in Wisconsin or surrounding areas to make it a little easier on the team. But yeah, we decided to stay based out of Colorado, and, you know, we're making it work. It's about, you know, I think the shortest track from us is about 14 hours to ERX, and we're looking about 20 hours to Crandon. So, yeah, we just have to plan carefully around it. It's been a really tight schedule this summer, but, you know, obviously wouldn't want to do anything else. This is a dream come true for me. So putting in a ton of work and just making sure we bring a good truck home after every round has been important. That's always in the back of my head, you know, thinking, all right, we only have, you know, 4 days to prep, turn this thing around and get back out to the next track. So, you know, I try not to let that, you know, drive too deep into my head when we're on the track, and definitely gotta run these things hard. But that's definitely been a struggle for us. We had to overcome, but nothing we can't handle.
To accomplish all that hard work, how big is your team, your support structure?
Our support structure is awesome. Couldn't do without our guys. We got three crew members, plus me and my dad, and they're really willing to help, man. It's so cool. Everyone always talks about it. Off-road is such a big family, right? So everybody is always willing to help us out, and luckily our team is all based out of Colorado. So, you know, if we do need help at the shop or something's running behind, or if we have a big issue, no problems. You know, we do have help. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's just me and my dad putting in a ton of hours and doing everything we can to make this happen. But definitely wouldn't have it any other way. It's been a lot of fun.
So aside from the hard work on the truck itself, and you touched on this a little bit earlier, but I want to dig a little bit deeper. What kind of work do you do on yourself as a driver when you're away from the track? Like you mentioned, you worked on yourself a little bit this past off season. So what does that look like?
You know, seat time is everything. A lot goes into racing, man, way more than people see. There's a lot of depth to it. And being healthy and mentally strong as a driver is super important, I think. Being confident, you know, after you start running strong, you know, the confidence is built, and exponentially you get faster and faster because of it. But as a driver this off season and in the past, you know, we run go-karts. That's where I came from. We have a local go-kart track real close to us. So we bought a shifter cart just for testing, practice basically. We've put together a pretty cool test track in on our property as well for the Pro Light, which not only is good to get comfortable in the truck before we head out, but, you know, do a shakedown, make sure mechanically everything's good to go. So it's definitely taken a lot, as a driver to kind of try to manage and pull a team together. You know, just through all the physical work of keeping the truck going, let alone trying to stay healthy and getting a lot of seat time in practice too.
On the last episode of the podcast, I talked to Keegan Kincaid, and last year he finished second in points by single digit points. And he said one of the things that he actually revisited this past off season was his diet. I mean, do you go that far in trying to find any competitive edge you can find?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, people might not say that, being a driver is the most physically demanding compared to some sports, right? But it's definitely a factor. You gotta be in good shape. You gotta be prepared for, to go 110% the entire race, right? So in short course, there's no pacing ourselves. It's go, go, go. And if you start to fade off at the end, you do see some, you know, sometimes that does happen. So, and it's also easy to just get lost in working in the shop. You know, you gotta get outside and get some fresh air and get some exercise every once in a while. So it's definitely all a factor in it. And, you know, Keegan is definitely a guy that a driver like me looks up to. So it's cool to hear that from him because someone like me that's, you know, just coming into the sport and really trying to do the best we can. So good to take key tips from drivers like Keegan and kind of follow in their footsteps.
So getting back to the task at hand, so I don't have to keep you too long tonight. So right now it's Tuesday night of World Cup week. So in, what would that be, 4 nights, you'll be on the track racing for your final points round. Between now and then, there's a lot to do. Like you mentioned, there's the parade, but when the rubber meets the road and you're in staging or on the line on Saturday for that round 11 race, I mean, where's your mental state looking at that just a couple days away?
I guess that's something that, I'm sure a lot of drivers think about. They might not talk about it much, but, you know, you have all these festivities going on, you know, practice and qualifying happen, you know, more than 24 hours before we're actually hitting the track to go race. So that's something to definitely think about. You know, you want to stay mentally focused and locked in. This is a huge mental game, especially at Crandon for me personally. You gotta stay on top of it. Basically, you gotta stay sharp. And when you're sitting at staging, you know, we don't get any fight laps. We don't get any practice before the race. It's just, you know, land rush, green flag, go. So, staying sharp and prepared for that is a big part of that. So throughout the week, just staying focused. That's really all I can say about that.
You brought up the land rush. So this will be, you know, really the third season that you've done a land rush in a truck. So you're still pretty green at these land rush starts compared to guys like we were talking about Keegan, who's, you know, done 1,000 of them. What's the stress level like for you on those land rush starts at Crandon?
Crandon's a special one for sure. You know, other tracks, you know, you get a rolling start. It's there's always nerves, right? I'm always nervous before a race. I don't know if that'll ever change. It can take a lot of years for that to go away. So you have the staging nerves, and then. You know, everyone fires it up and rolls up into their spot, and it's just like quiet before the race. It's pretty crazy experience. You know, it's hard to explain unless you've done it yourself. It's everything kind of seems to slow down before that green flag drops. It's pretty wild. Then once the green flag drops, all that goes away. You know, I think most drivers are probably right there with me. You just do the best you can. Everyone's going for the whole shot. Don't lift and hope for the best. Whoever comes out of turn one, you know, wants to run away with it.
All right, that's a pretty apt description, I think, and like you said, that pretty much falls in line with what other drivers will say. So I guess before I cut you loose here, any final thoughts on the weekend, any predictions or any hopes for yourself?
We're always hoping for the win, man. We have yet to win a short course race in ECV or Pro Light, so the competition's stiff. You know, we gotta stay focused. We got a lot of fast guys out there. Final thoughts is just gotta get through clean, you know, couldn't make the truck too early, but still gotta run at 110%. And yeah, we're hoping for a great weekend, but above all, gonna go out there and have a ton of fun. Super happy with how our season's gone. Can't thank everyone at Champ Off Road enough. All you guys have been awesome. The whole media team, everybody involved with Champ Off Road, super proud to be a part of all that. So definitely a huge thanks to you guys. And yeah, we're looking forward to capping off this season.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate your kind words, and I look forward to hopefully seeing you run up front this weekend.
Thanks so much, Shane.
As always, this podcast, as well as Champ Off Road, is supported by AMSOIL. Remember to visit AMSOIL.com for products that protect and maximize performance in all your vehicles and motorized toys. Use the convenient AMSOIL product guides to find what you need and get fast free shipping right to your door. AMSOIL, run with us. Now taking a look at some of our sportsman points battles. And remember, sportsman teams and drivers, they've got two rounds left. They race on Friday night at Crandon. They race again on Saturday at Crandon. Of course, Saturday, World Championship Saturday, giving everybody in the sportsman classes something to race for, that World Championship ring. But those points battles, two rounds of racing yet to decide those. But there are some doozies entering this final weekend. Stock Truck, Corey Holcher, Diesel Shanick, separated by 1 point. Sinkowski and Ewart also in the mix in that points battle as well, but that could come down to literally which driver can finish in front of the other driver at the end of round 12 on Saturday. Another very tight points battle is the 170 side-by-sides. Again, a 1 point gap between Cody Krantz leading points with two rounds to go and Ella Holcher in second in points. So again, whichever driver can out-duel the other will be the points champion in 170 side-by-sides. And of course, the fan favorite class of the sportsman division, Super Stock Truck. Joe Machosik was cruising to a points title, and then bad luck hit. Round 9 in Bark River, he finished 18th. He dropped out early with a transmission failure. Meanwhile, Kyle Cooper, who was trying to close that gap entering Bark River, didn't even think he was going to make it to Bark River. Had a punctured lung on Wednesday before Round 9 in Bark River. Got cleared to race on Friday afternoon, packed the truck up. They hit the road, and he made it to Bark River, finished third and fourth on the weekend to really close that points gap. It's only 7 points between Machosik and Cooper entering the final two rounds. Basically, whichever of those two drivers can pull off the better weekend and survive the carnage in Super Stock Truck will be your Super Stock Truck points champion. And now, as we move on to our second guest with the 52nd Crandon World Championships just around the corner, I could think of no better guest to have on the AMSOIL Championship Off-Road Podcast than these two people. They have been around racing in Crandon all 52 years. This will be Tom Schwartzberg's 51st weekend of racing at Crandon. He is a fascinating guy, a great ambassador of sportsman off-road racing. So let's get into it. All right, joining us now on the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL, has been around racing in Crandon all 52 years. From Super Buggy, it's Tom Schwartzberg. Tom, thank you so much for taking some time out for us.
Well, good evening, Shane, and thank you. It's special to talk to you about Crandon and off-road racing. That's been a major part of Tom and Ruth Schwartzberg's life. Like I said, this will be the 52nd year. So we're delighted to be with you tonight.
So the group of people that have actually been involved on the inside for all 52 years is a pretty small select group, but I guess let's start at the beginning. How did you even find out that there was a race going on in Crandon, and how did you guys decide that you had to show up?
Well, now you're going way back, of course, but a friend of mine wife lives in Monaco, and you know where Monaco is, or you could tell the listeners where Monaco is from the track. It's not too far, and there was a poster on the wall in Monaco about an off-road race, and at that particular time, he had a car. He had a Volkswagen Meyer Manx. I had a shop, and he said, would you like to go with me and build this car and go to this race in Crandon? I had no idea of it, but that's how we got started, 1970, Labor Day 1970.
Did you have to talk Ruth into that, or was she enthusiastic right from day one?
She was told at the time it was kind of like a trail ride event. I don't know about any enthusiasm, but she was very supportive. So we started out, and now here we are 52 years later. So the support has been tremendous.
When you were at that first race in the woods outside of Crandon, did you have the sense that it would grow into anything bigger, or did it seem like kind of a flash in the pan?
Flash in the pan, Shane, as you might have been told or remember, that was the lap was 25 miles for one lap, and it was the brush run 101, which was 101 miles. And off-road racing was out west, of course, with the Baja 1000 and the Mint 400. But the Midwest, there wasn't anything around here. I had really no idea that it would take off like it did, because of it just seemed like 101 miles and then it would be over. So we really didn't think of anything beyond that weekend.
So how soon after that first one were you hooked on it? How soon did you know that you had to do it again?
Another good question. Jim and I were together for the first 2 years, and after the second year, there were events showing up in the Midwest, and a lot of talk about the future. And after driving, we shared driving experience with the car. I really enjoyed this. I mean, this was pretty exciting. And I called Gil George at Funco. Funco was one of the California cars that was popular, along with Chenoweth. And I ordered a chassis. In 1972, we came to Crandon with a brand new Funco car, and then Ruth and I would, she would co-ride with me in that car, and then I was, as you said, I was really hooked on it at that point, because we had, now we had a race car, and it was really, really, we could really see that this was really enjoyable at that point. And just the involvement with the people, of course, really meant a lot.
For a lot of us younger fans, or fans that are just new to off-road racing in general, that whole concept, you know, endurance racing on swamp roads, basically, that's a completely foreign idea. What was it actually like to race in those days?
The biggest part for me was the endurance part, the racing the track, so to speak. In other words, we would get a certificate if we just finished a race. It wasn't about... Of course, we didn't have sponsors. We didn't have an organization, and so it was a real challenge for me to be able to work on a car, put it together, and it was a big challenge to finish 101 miles. And then we got into Crandon started to do a Saturday and Sunday event, so we did 101 miles. Excuse me, on Saturday. I'm not sure which day it was, but one day was single seat or single driver, and then the other day was two seat. So then Ruth would ride with me in that event, of course. So we would, 202 miles on a weekend was pretty special. But it was more about, timed events starting two by two, and on that track were trucks, Jeeps, motorcycles. You know, there were lots of people out there at the same time, but we were racing the clock. So it's a totally different mindset. And again, no money involved and no sponsorship thing. So you looked at it totally different than, and I really liked the enduro part. That's what I really liked, was the challenge to finish.
Every driver that I've talked to that raced that format, the endurance format, like guys like my dad and Jeff Dore, Gary Bradley, all of those guys have some really tremendous stories about like just lousy luck or, you know, overcoming some huge adversity just to finish. Do you have any good stories like that?
The Crandon track had so many, had these mud holes, which I'm sure they were by design and they put water in them. And that was a real big challenge to be able to get through the water and not have electrical problems, and or vision was a big factor in those races, because we didn't have mud eaters. We didn't even have full-face helmets those years. All we had was goggles. And, of course, by yourself, it was really hard. With a co-driver, Ruth would help me out and talked about getting a you've seen these plexiglass covers that you put over a cake after you bake the cake. I don't bake cakes. But anyway, Ruth went to the store, and I said, why don't you get a plastic cover? And so she did, and she brought home one of these plastic cake covers, and when we get to the water hole, then she would hold that over my face so we could go through a little faster, and then I could see. And it worked quite well. I don't know where she did put it after we, while she was riding there, but she did it. We really enjoyed that part of it, doing that together.
So at some point, and I don't know exactly when, but while you were competing, you and Ruth were competing, both of you eventually became involved on the sanctioning body side too. So how did, I guess, what inspired you to move into that side of racing?
And that's a really great question, and that's really why we continued on in the sport, if you want to call it a sport or the activity there, because we had been racing, and it was all about the people and the friendships that we developed, and that was the important thing. And but there were some tracks, but we had no organization, we had no rules, we didn't have we needed class distinction as far as the different types of cars, and we needed tech, and we needed on-track control. And I got interested because that was in the next step. And the people were so focused on just coming to an event on a weekend with their families and having a good time and really enjoying it. But we needed kind of a level playing field. And so the interest was there. The respect of each other was just great. We all just worked together and had a wonderful time doing it. And then, of course, it evolved into, as we grew as a driver's organization and the representation that we had, where we could go to tracks like Crandon and present them with a package where they didn't have to be concerned about the things I just mentioned there, and we could all have more of a level playing field. And, of course, there was no money involved at that point. So all volunteer and really all from your heart. So the people were... It's really all about the people.
So by the time, you know, the early 90s rolled around, really 20 years after racing started in Crandon, by then they were getting national attention. You know, cable networks were coming to cover the races. Were you surprised by that much growth, you know, in a 20-year span?
I was somewhat shocked, more than surprised, because we started out, our intention was, like I mentioned, to run good, safe races for the family, and we never sat down at a board meeting and never set a goal to reach any kind of attention. We never looked that far ahead. It just grew, and all of us sat in a board meeting and looked at each other and said, this track is calling, that track is calling, named drivers from California are coming in. And then, of course, when television got to, like you said, to Crandon, that's then we really got exposure. But it wasn't planned, and to say we were surprised, shocked, or pleasantly amazed at the growth was tremendous. It really, even looking back today of where it is, and I still can't really can't wrap around it. You know, it was amazing. You're right.
From your point of view, being on the inside of that first, you know, 25 years or a little bit more of growth compared to the last 25 years, how do you compare those two periods of growth?
Another good question. We tried to, on the plus side, we maintained, or always tried to maintain, honesty, integrity, and a balanced race series where we would represent the drivers and be concerned about families and the integrity and the respect that the drivers and the people had on and off the track. But as you know, as you bring in the dollars and you bring in the growth there, some of that disappears when you try and mix professional racers with family camping racers and even with professional classes. So I think the first half of the 25 year, of the 50 years, that part of it, we really weren't doing it for recognition. We weren't looking to get on the main stage and be able to handle that part of it. That became extremely difficult. And as you know, when the money becomes involved and the influence of sponsors and professional drivers, we didn't really know how to handle that. And it was hard to make that transition. And we've tried over the years, or until SOTA was no longer, we tried to be as fair to the professional people as we did to the family amateur type drivers as far as classes and enforcing rules and expecting the same type of respect that we all enjoyed for those many years. But that, you know, as you all know, it's the more notoriety you receive and the bigger it gets, it becomes very overwhelming. The thing that never changed was the people, and that's the reason I stayed with it, was the people.
So now that you and Ruth, you know, talking about the task at hand a little bit here, you're staring down, you know, the 52nd World Championship weekend. Is that what keeps you coming back, is all those relationships that you've built over the years?
That is a very major, major part of it. I still enjoy driving the race car and the travel part of it. We live 200 miles south of Crandon, so we enjoy that part of it. And Ruth has been supportive for, I tell people, the only thing that I've done longer or been a part of longer than the 52 years of Crandon is 50, how many years, Ruth? Will be 56 years of marriage. I'm certainly blessed with a wonderful wife that supported me in all this. So the two of us, you know, still enjoy that part of it. The people on the track respect me at my age and my equipment level, and that's always a good thing. And but as you mentioned in your question, the people relationships, when we drive in there, the people that come over, some of them I don't even know, and they are just wonderful. That's all I can say.
Traditionally and historically speaking, racing has mostly been a male sport, but it's always been supported behind the scenes by wives, mothers, daughters, and sisters. Now you're clearly grateful to have spent your entire time in racing alongside Ruth. So how meaningful is it that you share that passion for racing together?
That's another great question. As SOTA evolved, and I don't remember, Ruth might remember, the years that she would participate, but SOTA wanted classes and we wanted to include the family. We didn't have the short course kart type vehicles those years. So the men had to share their vehicles. You know, women didn't have their individual cars or trucks. So the interaction there was tremendous. We shared the same car. We shared the same helmet. And on the way home from the race weekends, we could discuss the track, and it became more and more evident that she enjoyed the competition more so than I did. And I was more involved in administration than the actual competition. But I, you know, we really, together, it just really, really, really blossomed from that standpoint. And if any of our listeners have ever went to races where they had women's classes, and of course, when the driver's organization of SOTA went away, there were no more individual or what you would call separate. If women wanted to race, they raced with the men. There was no women's classes. And so that disappeared. I'm not sure exactly when that transpired. But at the end of the day, some of the racetracks used to have mechanics races. Well, years ago when they had women's classes, it's Sunday afternoon and everyone's ready to go home. And they're working on their cars and they're putting things away. But when those women got on the track, everybody dropped their wrenches. They dropped whatever they were doing. And they went and watched those women race because they put on a fantastic show. No fear. The car was going home and get fixed anyway. So go out and have a good time. And they put on really quite a program. It was very, very, very special.
So you said that she's the more competitive out of the two of you. Kind of reading between the lines, it sounds like you're not done racing until she lets you be done. Is that true?
Yes, she's very supportive, and she's smiling right now. Anyway, at me, people have asked me, when I can't get in the car, and as you know, I race a super buggy, and there are no doors. You have to climb in through the top. When I can't get in the car, that's when I'm going to stop racing, because you can't, there's nothing out there, Shane, that can replace off-road racing and the people and the involvement that you have if you're there for all of that. If you're there just to race and you're a professional racer, there's still something so special about going to a race like this and being a part of it. I can't find anything else, haven't found anything else in life that is more rewarding, more satisfying, and that you can give back and just see by good principles of how to live that the sport just grew. It just happened because we respected people and we looked out for families and we looked out for each other. And whenever you needed anything, even today, it's right there. People are so willing to help, and really, really a major, major part of, as I keep mentioning.
So I know you're a modest person, but I'm going to press on you just a little bit here. A lot of us, like myself, I grew up at the racetrack, and a bunch of us who were, you know, racetrack kids who are still around, we're big Tom Schwartzberg fans. Are you proud of the mark that you've left on racing in that way?
Not really. I'm in the sport because of the people and the thankfulness of my wonderful wife. Somebody told me not too long ago that I was a legend, and I wasn't sure how to take that, but I'm in it today, and I just so enjoy it. As far as any accomplishments or whatever, I've met so many wonderful people. I've traveled so many different areas of the country. I've had opportunities, people have helped, and there are many, many activities in and at the racetrack. That the on-track part is great, but boy, you know, I want my turn to drive, but it's really, really special that I can just be a part of it. But people have come up to me that I don't know and said some nice things too, and you know, I would say to Ruth, maybe driving home, I'd say, someone said they were watching me. I said, what do you want to watch us? 70, how old am I? 78? I'll be 70. A 78-year-old man driving around in this car. I say, you know, it's amazing. You should be watching the pros and the people that are, you know, watch everyone, I guess. But I would have never believed some of the positive comments that I've gotten.
You know, I think you really capture the essence of off-road racing there, especially sportsman racing. It's those relationships and friendships that we build that make off-road racing so great. I really appreciate that insight from you.
Well, thank you, Shane. Would it be all right if Ruth just thanked our listeners from her point of view?
Oh, absolutely.
Hi, Shane.
So is Tom telling the truth? You're the more competitive of the two?
Well, no, I don't think so. But he did a lot of administration things, and when he would be doing on-track meetings and everything. So I felt that he put more time into that than the actual driving, because he would be out doing rough driving things and then come in and race. And I felt that a lot of times, so I was maybe a little more competitive at times because I was putting my energy into racing and he was putting his energy into running, you know, the actual program, but he still raced. But you understand what I mean.
Now, between you and me, and I won't tell Tom what your answer is, which one of you was the better driver?
Well, I learned from him, and it would be him. You know, the way he drives, but he encouraged me to drive, and totally different between the men's race and the women's race. But I enjoyed it very much, and as he said earlier, the opportunity was there, because now women can race, but you have to have your own vehicle, whereas we used the same car. And now he said helmet and all. When we first started many years ago, I had my own helmet and all, but the last time I raced was at Oshkosh, and it was, I was 69 years old, and I'm going to be 77. It was a mechanics race, and that was fun because I hadn't raced for years, so that I wore his helmet, his suit. He was concerned it might not fit because sizes change as you get older. But no, I was able to do that, and we found coming home that day, you know, I talked about this part of the track and that part of the track and how the car wasn't working, and it's a lot of communication that you don't have if the other person isn't out on the track. And particularly Crandon years ago, they didn't groom the track like they do today. And when it was the women's race, we were the last race, and that corner where we start, now is it called Cowboy Corner? Oh, the ruts were horrible. You practically got in, but we had a great time racing. And I just mentioned to Tom before, like, one person that I raced with was, and I don't remember her married name, but it's Jenny Parsons. So she raced in the women's race years ago. And now to have that friendship and to see her and her family, it's been a wonderful time of just sharing, and we've met wonderful, wonderful people.
Do you echo what Tom said about the most important part of racing for you has been just the relationships all these years?
Very much so, yes. When we think of the people, and as he said, the support. I'm thinking of a Antigo race that Tom had, I think it was the only one, but a pretty severe accident, and ended up at the Antigo Hospital. And when we got back, everything was basically cleaned up, and our car, which was strapped onto our trailer in many parts, they had taken, all of the racers had taken care of everything for us. And, you know, you don't forget those things, that everyone basically was gone, but they had everything ready for us to go home. Or if we were missing a part, people have helped each other, and many friendships like the Seafell Sinal and Michael Hester, all of these people have encouraged us and helped us with racing during our later years of life. So that's been very wonderful. It really has been special to people. And like knowing your father and the people at Crandon, it's been very, very nice. We've had a great time, and it's been fun.
Ruth, thank you so, so much for your time and your insight. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, and here's Tom.
Tom, once again, thank you for taking a few moments for talk with us. We look forward to seeing you this weekend at Crandon.
Okay, we'll certainly touch base. Thank you. Bye now.
Well, that'll be a wrap for this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. Thanks again to both of our guests on the show this week, Dylan Poynton from ProLite and Tom and Ruth Schwartzberg. Tom Schwartzberg, like I said, will be out there racing for the 51st year in 52 years of off-road racing at Crandon International Raceway. So thanks again to both of our guests. And with that, nothing else but to do it. World Championship weekend a couple days away. As always, Brent and I will be on the call for that one. We can't wait. It's going to be a great weekend. Don't forget to tune in at champoffroad.com/livestream on Friday afternoon and Saturday all day long, essentially. A ton of racing to happen on Saturday. You can also find us on the Flow Sports Flow Racing app if you're a subscriber there as well. So thanks again for listening to the Champ Off Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. I'm Shane Stetsny, and we'll talk again very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil.